Off we go for another day, another week. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon on the Bob McCowan podcast. And I guess we should take a moment here off the top, Shannon, to welcome maybe dozens of new listeners on Sirius XM, channel 167, where this program will now air Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern time for at least the foreseeable future. We shall see how long that is.
Could you please define foreseeable future?
No, I can't. I have no way of knowing that. We are contractually obligated for a period of time, and we will honor our obligation as we always do. But beyond that, I cannot make any projections or predictions as to how long this episode will last. Well, this episode,
it'll last an hour, won't it? This one?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, congratulations, Bob.
Well, congratulations to you too, John.
Thank you, Bob.
I guess it'll be nice if somebody else other than you and I congratulated us.
Yeah. Actually, I have received a couple of texts today from some avid listeners saying congratulations on the Sirius deal. So that's good.
Oh, you posted something, did you? Or did they?
Oh, they did.
Oh, and did then, they?
Yes, yeah. Barely, but they did, yes.
Barely?
Yeah.
So, so we should be mad right from the get-go.
Well, let's be mad anyway. Enough.
Well, we do that anyhow.
I know.
General rule.
Well, if you would show up on time, you wouldn't be as mad.
If I would show up on time? Therein lies the pot, referring to the kettle. If you know what I mean.
When I have an opportunity to drive a Mack truck through a hole, I will drive a Mack truck through a hole.
There has not been a day that you have, other than today, that you have gotten on here ahead of me.
Today was the day.
The only reason I was a little tardy was because I thought, well, what the hell? I'm not going to sit here and talk to our producer, Hugh, who I enjoy talking to, by the way, perhaps even more than I enjoy talking to you. But I'm not going to sit here and just chat with him and wait for you. I'll just wait. And Shannon starts firing texts at me, like, where the hell are you all of a sudden?
Firing texts, all of one.
Well, it made my phone ding, so I'm well aware of it. Well. I don't think we did anything special here because we're debuting on Sirius, but it just so happens that we, I think, have a pretty interesting guest for everybody today.
Indeed.
Pascal Siakam of the Toronto Raptors has done few, if any, interviews for quite some period of time. I'm going to say several months, but again, I don't really know. I just know he has talked to very few people over the last while, and today he will talk to us from Los Angeles, California, where he has been abiding.
But it's been such a strange year when you think about what the Raptors went through with their year in Tampa and then COVID and the escapades of Kyle Lowry moving on and the mystery of Masai. There's been lots of news, but not very many people to talk about it.
Well, he has been recovering too, as I think most basketball fans would be aware. Many sports fans as in general, from shoulder surgery, which he had after last season. He did not play near the end of the that weird COVID year in Tampa and ultimately had to have an operation on his shoulder. So we'll talk to him about that. And
and the trade rumors. I mean, it was, and you know, remember we had Nick Nurse on last week. It was so strange that Siakam's name kept coming up for, and we would actually say, well, why would they come up? Because I mean, he's such a vital cog in this team. I mean, he's a core guy. Why would they come up? I mean, this is not a case of what we see with Ben Simmons in Philadelphia, a guy wanting out. Siakam's part of the. He's part of this organization. He's part of Toronto. You can see that every time he's played for this organization since he signed here.
Well, I mean, but I think
he's a core guy.
Yeah, I think in fairness, this was not about Siakam wanting out. This was not even about the Raptors shopping him. This was interest on the part of other teams who wondered whether Siakam might be available from the Toronto Raptors. And Masai Ujiri did ultimately say that he had no interest in or desire to trade Pascal Siakam. But in the midst of that, you mentioned Nick Nurse, who we talked to last week on this program. We did address with him the story of the issues that may have existed between Siakam and Nurse, that they got into some kind of a cat fight. And he essentially dismissed it as insignificant, just one of those things that happens from time to time. And we'll see what Pascal himself has to say about that.
I just, I mean, two guys wanting to win, right? Two guys wanting to win. And when you're not playing well, there has to be, there's going to be some friction at some point, don't you think?
Well, I think so. I mean, I don't, I mean, at the end of the day, we'll see if Pascal wants to get into the specifics of it, but Nick did not.
No.
He just dismissed it as, you know, insignificant and that everything is okay. And he and Pascal spoke in Vegas. And so the coach's perspective is that everything's cool. Yeah. We'll find out if the player feels exactly the same way. And hopefully we'll get some kind of sense from him as to what he thinks of the changes that have been made and are imminent. Most specifically, the absence of Kyle Lowry. Because when you look at this roster, yeah, there's a few new players. We don't know how long they're going to stay. But the departure of Kyle Lowry is the one key point of difference. And this will be the first time that Pascal Siakam has played without Kyle Lowry as the principal point guard. And we'll see if he has what kind of take he has on that.
Well, and you have to think that now he's no longer a kid. He's a veteran player on this team. He's a guy they're expecting leadership from. You know, and what, you know, I would assume whatever Lowry and even going back to the times when DeRozan was here and other veteran players were around that they were helping him. I fully believe that I would expect that now it's Siakam's going to be the one that's going to have to lead the kids.
Yep. Pascal Siakam of the Toronto Raptors, this time on the Bob McCown podcast with featuring John Shannon. Well, both with and featuring.
There you go.
I suppose you
what
could
a day.
You could be featured and not even be on.
What a day.
I'm not sure how that would work, but I suppose it's possible. Perhaps we'll try that out sometime. We'll come back and connect with Mr. Siakam after these messages. Been a while since we saw Pascal Siakam in person and a while since we saw him on the court. Some surgery during the off season on your shoulder, and I gather that's okay. You made it through all right.
Yeah, definitely. It was a successful surgery, you know, from what I know, and it's been going well. Just continue to rehab, and you know, it's a long process. It takes a while, but I just think that, you know, like, it's something that I had to get right, and you know, I was you know. That was not really what I wanted to do, but I think nobody really wants to get surgery. So, but it was the best option and the best thing to do. And I'm doing well. And right now, you know, I'm able to do a little bit of basketball, continue to strengthen the shoulder. So it's going well.
Have you had surgery before? I probably should know.
No, that was
your first time, right?
That was my first surgery.
Wow. Yeah. Little scary,
hopefully,
huh?
Hopefully the last one. Yeah. Super scary. I think, obviously, like, cause I'm used to always, you know, like just, even just kind of like resorting to natural things, or like, you know, even when I'm injured, like I really don't like taking a lot of pills and things like that. So, so I feel like it was just a little scary, you know, to go through that after, you know, the year that I had too, like, you know, a lot of things happening. So it was a little scary, but, you know, I think, you know, with the help of my team, my family and things like that, I got through it.
I assume your doctors have told you that they expect a full recovery. The surgery went well.
Yes. It was, we expecting a full recovery, you know, obviously like the dates, you know, I don't know exactly, you know, the dates. And I'm definitely going back to Toronto soon, be able to sit down with the team doctors, you know, Alex and all of them, and we figure out, you know, obviously a timetable and, yeah. And you know, we know roughly is, you know, 5 or 6 months. So, but, you know, you can't really, you don't know exactly what the dates are, you know?
So any question that if the season starts around the 1st of November, do you think you're going to be in the lab? Or is it going to be after that?
I have no idea, to be honest. Like, I can't give you that answer because I really don't know. And I think that, you know, once I'm back in Toronto, I'll definitely have a better idea and, you know, sitting down with the team and making sure that we have like a schedule. And I think, again, like even that could change, right? Like we don't know exactly what it is or what that date is, but you know, I'm hoping soon. I'm hoping really soon.
Well, and I don't want to give away any secrets, but I understand you got a new place to live in Toronto. You probably even haven't even seen it yet. Have you?
Oh, no, definitely not. And yeah, like just, again, I haven't been drawn. I don't know if it's 2 years. I mean, I lost track of time.
Yeah.
But,
oh, no kidding.
But yeah, just had to get a new place, you know, making sure that we settled in and yeah, like I'm just excited to be back, like going back in Toronto. I feel like, you know, it's kind of like being away from home. And just, you know, now that, you know, you go back to normal things, you know, go to the OVO, you know, center, you know, go in the Scotiabank Arena, like all those things are definitely going to feel good and being back home. So I'm excited about that.
Tell me about this, going through this season, besides the injury, which happened, you know, I think about 3/4 of the way through the abbreviated season, something like that. Even before that, what was it like for you playing in Tampa, essentially being on the road all year long? What did you go through in that process?
Obviously it wasn't the best situation, you know, and I think that, you know, everyone thought that, you know, the team from not only the team, because like the players, you know, not only the players, but you know, from management or even the people working with the team, you know, they have families and they have people that, you know, they have to relocate. And there's so much, you know, going into that and trying to find. I mean, I think I lived in a hotel for like almost 2 months, couldn't really find a place that I felt comfortable in. You know, the market was really like it was really hard, you know, to find a place. So that you know, kind of like messed me up. You know, I'm a homebody. Like I like being home. I like feeling comfortable. And I think that's the only thing that's usually constant for me. Like I know that I'm done playing basketball. I do whatever I want. Like I want to go home and relax and enjoy. You know, like just time with family and friends. Not being able to have that. And then also, you know, obviously we already know we play in Tampa. You know, felt like a away game. Every game felt like an away game. I mean, I think those games were like there would be more jerseys of other teams than our jerseys. You know, so it was just super weird being in that environment. You know, like something totally new. And then obviously like the COVID, you know, outbreak with the team. We have to go through that. You know, so many games without all our players. I mean, it was tough. Like, I mean, for me personally, you know, I got COVID. You know, a lot of other players and people on the team had COVID. So it was like going through that, you know, trying to recover, lost a lot of weight, came back, you know, I mean, I think for me, having COVID was really sick and, you know, all those things, but, you know, I had to get out of that, you know, and I think for me, as soon as like, I was able to get out of my room, like I wanted to play, like I wanted to get back on the court, play, going back, trying to get your rhythm back, and, you know, I think for me, like by the end of the season, it was the best I felt in like a couple of years. Just, you know, feeling really good about my body, feeling good about, you know, like where I was physically and mentally, you know, like I just was in a good place. And I think for me, like I was finally getting the rhythm and I was feeling, you know, like really good about everything. And then I got injured. So there's so many things that happened and it was an up and down season. And obviously like not being able to win or go to the playoffs. Hurt. So yeah, it was a tough season.
What was the worst symptom that you had in COVID, and how long did it take you to recover from that symptom?
I mean, I think for me it was like obviously I lost my smell. I lost, you know, couldn't really smell anything. I was, you know, like, kind of like always cold and things like that. You know, feeling really sick. And I think for me that was the longest. Thank God it wasn't crazy bad, but, you know, I lost a lot of weight. And you know, I just think that also, like, you got to get back in basketball shape, right? Because, you know, being that, you know, with the virus and all that. So, like, getting back on the court and trying to get back in basketball shape was also hard. But yeah, I think for me, like the weirdest thing would probably be the losses, like of like smell and stuff.
The injury too. What was it? You ran into a screen? Is that what happened?
Oh well, like it wasn't even a screen. I think like I don't remember what the play was. I think somebody just ran into me, like, and I feel like I had an injury before earlier in the year. It was like in the front part of my shoulder, so that was yeah, like and I kind of missed a game or two or something with that. And I feel like I never really also recovered from that, and I kept playing on it, and then I just think that, you know, like that bump, you know, with the players. I don't think it was a screen. I think it was just super random, like, and yeah. It just happened, and yeah, like I think at that point, you know, we just like we felt like something was wrong, and we had to check it out, and turned out we had to get surgery.
Left shoulder, right shoulder.
Left shoulder.
Well, right would have probably been worse, huh? Given that you're
right-handed. Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, for sure, it would have been worse. So I mean, again, thank God it wasn't my right shoulder. It was my left. It's still impactful. It still, you know, hurts and stuff. You know, you have to a lot of time off. But you know, like I said, I'm able to do a lot of stuff that I didn't think I would be able to do at this point. So I'm happy about that.
So what are your workouts like right now? Just a lot of cardio stuff.
Yeah, no, right now, like usually like my day is just, you know, like I wake up, you know, morning, go, have rehab, a little bit of prep work on my shoulder. I have an hour on the court, just get, you know, dribbling, you know, like ball handling, shooting, you know, like all those things. And then after that, you know, I have strength work, you know, like anything to strengthen the shoulder. I have that after, and you know, like that's usually my days. And then I do a little bit of conditioning. So like 5 days a week, and you know, like sometimes on the weekend also, like depending on how I feel. But yeah, like it's been nonstop for like months, so I'm really happy about, you know, where I'm at in my progression right now, and I'm super excited, you know, to just get back on the court. Like I'm hungry.
So I mean, a lot of people have had surgeries before. I've had plenty of them. I've never had a shoulder though. So tell me what the symptoms are like when you're on the court. You're a principally right-handed guy, although you use your left hand a lot, especially when you're mm-hmm. driving to the basket. What couldn't you do when the shoulder was still, you know, when you first got back on the court?
Yeah, well, like I couldn't dribble. Like I couldn't, you know, like you can't really put any force into the shoulder. I couldn't really raise my shoulder, you know, like,
oh yeah,
raise my hands up or like, you know, go behind my back or. You know, not a lot, not pushing. You can't push into anything. Like I still probably can't do push-ups right now. But you know, just a lot of just little restriction like that, that kind of like, you know, you can't really do much. You can't dribble. You can't shoot with my left hand, like layups or anything like that. But yeah, like it was just, I was in a sling for like almost a month. And yeah, I think now it's like, when I was out of the sling, you know, I was able to, you know, it took me a little bit, but I was able to ball handling and stuff. I was able to shoot, like use my left hand to support my shot, because it's just literally, that's kind of like what it is.
Yeah.
So we do everything to kind of like make sure that it's strong and things like that. But after that, it was just like, you know, like, I think for me, like my shoulder feels good. So, which is from the doctor is like not the best part, because, you know, it makes you feel like you want to do a lot more than
you should.
Right. Like, because I feel like I feel good, but. It's just not quite like ready, so I got to be careful with that. But it's been great, man, to be honest with you, like being on the court, and I'm pleasantly surprised on some of the things that I can do right now. You know, so I like it.
A lot of things happened during the course of the off season. We're going to talk about that. Pascal Siakam is with us. We'll be back after this message. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, and the Raptors' Pascal Siakam with us. I don't need to get into any of the specific details, and I don't know how much you want to talk about it, but there was a lot of talk about an issue you had with the coach, with Nick Nurse, or issues. Was it anything more than the normal stuff of being a basketball player and a coach and being together all the time, and eventually you're going to have disagreements with stuff, or was there something deeper rooted in it?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's super funny. I think obviously, like with all the trade rumors and everything that's going on, like, and I think that, you know, like obviously it's just easier to hang on to something that, you know, like kind of feels wrong and you know, kind of run with it. But I just think for me, like, is we play somewhere, like, again, we talked about all the struggles that we had this season, right? Like not being able to win, playing away from Toronto, And, you know, just frustrating losing, you know, and those are things that, you know, like people that, two people that care about winning, you know, you go out there and sometimes you get frustrated. And I think it was nothing more than that, like just being frustrated about not being able to, you know, like accomplish what we feel like we were capable of doing. And it was just a, you know, disagreement and we kind of moved past that a long time ago. I mean, like, it was just funny to me watching TV and seeing people still talking about it. It's like this is done, you know, like let's move on. And it was one disagreement and we are good. And for me, I think with me, Nick, like the whole organization, we focus on winning. Like we want to get back to who we know we are. And I think that that's the only thing that's on our minds. And I think that people, it's time for people to just let it go. Like it's
not. No, I hear you. And I wanted you to get your two cents in because we had Nick on the show last week and I can tell you, he said exactly the same thing pretty much. You know, mm-hmm. It happens. It was one of those things and you guys moved past it and there's nothing to worry about.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, go ahead.
No, I just, as a professional athlete though, you know, the mindset that you have to be at that elite level is hard. How did you manage all of the trade rumor stuff? I mean, this has been, there are lots of us, when we talked about it on this podcast, Bob and I did, we couldn't understand it, but right. How did you manage it? How did you get through that?
I think for me, I think with all the trade rumor stuff happening, like there was nothing really concrete for me to really be alarmed. Like it was just like, it was nothing that was, I mean, it was always about like, okay, this team likes Pascal or this or that. Like it was really nothing for me to feel like, you know, like something was going to happen. And if something did happen, I've been around the league a little bit now to know that, you know, like the business and like, I understand it, you know, like for me, like I know what it is. I know what it's like. And, you know, obviously being close to like, you know, guys like Jakob, Damar and all those people and seeing everything that's happened, like I know the business, like I'm not, you know, like I'm not naive, but I understand it. And for me, once I do that, like I know what's going on and I know that I have the respect with the Raptors organization. I know that, you know, like we have that level of communication where it's like, if there's something that's like significant that's supposed to happen, you know, I'll be aware. And if that's the case, like it is what it is, you know, like I understand the business, but for me, obviously, like I want to be in Toronto, you know, like I feel like, since I got drafted, like I've always had that connection to the city, to the team, you know, like just someone that's an underdog, like someone that came from, you know, literally nothing to be where he is right now, you know, like I always had that connection. So when people always used to, you know, talk about Canada and you know, like say bad things about Toronto, like it used to upset me just because like it still does upset me because I feel part of it. I feel part of the city. Like I know that there's a lot to prove and you know, like I'm proud to be there, you know, proud to be, you know, drafted by the Raptors. And I just want to continue to win. Again, obviously, like it wasn't fun losing, you know, for anyone. And I think that's all we all focus on right now. Like just getting back to our winning ways and be the team that we know we're capable of. And again, hopefully bring another championship to the city. Like that's all I really care about.
So I'll tell you what intrigues me. I mean, and I'm trying to put myself in your position. When you start hearing these rumors, do you pick up the phone and call Masai or do you call Bobby and do you say, what the hell's going on? Or do you stay in your own lane?
Yeah, I think, again, like that's the gray, like, you know, the gray area. It's like, when do you make that call? Because, again, like there was nothing really like there for me to, you know, like I said, it was a lot of just chit-chat on Twitter. Like it's literally what I thought it was. And until I heard something really significant, you know, like I just felt like there was no need, you know, to talk to the organization. And I think that obviously being in Vegas, you know, we had a great conversation with Masai and the whole, you know, Bobby and all of them. Like it was just like, you know, like laid out on the table. And it was, like I said, there was nothing really there. So I didn't make that call and I didn't feel the need to. And again, I understand the business also. I'm not naive to it, but I also knew that there was nothing there for me to be able to like, you know, pick up the phone.
How important was it for you for Masai to be here long term with you?
No, I mean it was great, man. Obviously, like I've known Masai, you know, a long time, and again, he's someone that we look up to, you know, like with all the work that he does for the continent, the youth in Africa, And again, I'm African and proud to be, you know, like having someone like him is definitely, you know, a blessing. And obviously, like, want him around, and I'm happy that he was able to do that. And we got to continue to, you know, like just get back to work. And I think that's the conversation we had when the whole thing happened. It was like, let's get to work And obviously we have that connection, the African connection, and we know that, you know, we have a lot of big like dreams or like about who we are, and it comes with a lot of responsibilities, but you know, we're kind of ready for that, and that's kind of like what was said
with Pascal Siakam of the Toronto Raptors. So for some, it may, and I don't know how it feels for you, but maybe like a lifetime ago that you guys carried the championship trophy around. And a lot of the guys that were the nucleus of that team that you played with are no longer. And another one of great significance has departed since you last were on the court, and that's Kyle Lowry. Tell me about your relationship with Kyle, and as a fellow player, how important was he to your team?
Yeah, man. I think again, like, I think everything has been said, you know, like I said, like, he's, you know, the greatest Raptor. And you know, I think just watching him, obviously I was here when DeMar and them was here. So like just watching them, we always used to watch them as our big brothers, right? Like it was them, you know, making sure they take us to dinner, do the little things for us, and being there for us, you know, through our journey. And for me, like, I remember him, you know, just like all his long, my transition passes, me running down the floor, him throwing me like a long ass pass from all the way down the court. And you know, like, we always had that connection since like rookie year. And I think for me, just seeing him continue to grow, and all he has achieved for like the Toronto Raptors and everything that he's done, like, I mean, it's incredible. Super happy for him. He's a legend. And obviously we're going to miss him, you know, like, and sometimes it was funny. It was in Vegas and we went to dinner, you know, we took all the young guys to dinner, and I looked around, I'm like, I'm the oldest person here. Like, it was super funny. Cause it was like, man, like, you know, like, look at, like, you know, things kind of like coming full circle. And we used to look at Kyle and Jamar as those people that would give us, you know, kind of like the advice and things like that. But now, looking back, you know, all those young guys, everyone is 19, 20 years old. It's like, man, like, that's crazy. So just, I think for me, man, he's always going to have that impact on the Raptors. And again, he's a Raptor forever. And obviously, like, we know that we're going to miss his presence and stuff. And I'm just happy for him, really. Like, you know, he was able to move on. And like I said, he's always going to be a Raptor.
So what would he have taught you that you can actually now teach Scottie Barnes?
I mean, I think for me, like, one of the things that with them, it was always like, you know, obviously wanting to let us be us again. Like, that's kind of like what they always did. Like, they let us be us, just go out there, enjoy, have fun, play the game. And for me, like, I just know how hard he worked. I think that's one thing that I could always point out. You know, it's like, Kyle was the first in the gym. He, you know, he got his work done. You know, he was there at night. Sometimes you come to gym at night, you'll find him there. Like, just his work ethic for me, like, that's the biggest thing. And I think, that's kind of like my way of leading, you know, just by being out there, doing the best that I can, working hard on my game. And sometimes leading by example is the best way to lead. And obviously Kyle was a vocal leader also, but I think for me, what I picked up from him was just like his hard work and being dedicated to getting better, getting his body right, and all those things. So if I can, you know, do the same for all the young players and they can look at me at that person, like, that would mean like a lot to me.
Well, I don't know if you remember the first time that we met and you came in the studio. It was right after you got drafted, that before the season started, and you came in and sat in the studio, and you did that several times. But I remember that first meeting. It seems like kind of yesterday, but it really was a long time ago. So in a really short period of time, as you said, you've gone from being, you know, the guy that just got drafted that's trying to make a basketball team to the senior statesman almost on this team, you know? It's like, snap your fingers and there you are, huh?
Oh my goodness, like, that's super funny. Just because, like, I do remember that. I mean, like, it was like just going to that studio, and it was just like, I mean, like, it was super fresh. Like, and now I'm just looking back at it, like, again, like, it's crazy, you know, like that happened like that, and how fast that happened. But then again, it's a blessing, you know. And I always talk to, you know, Todd Jafar, like, my agents, is just like, you know, like, this is something that we see coming, right? Like, we prepare for this moment, and we always knew that, you know, like, that was a level that I was supposed to get to, and we know that there's another level that I can get to. And just seeing things coming full circle is going, you know, like, and obviously, like, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs, but this is something that we envision, and again, like, I'm super excited about the next step And like we talked about, like, I can't look around. There's no Kyle around. I can't look around. There's no one. So it's us, you know, me, Fred, you know, OG. Like, we gotta take care of this thing. We gotta be big boys, you know, and go out there and you know, again, something that we worked super hard for. We just want to go out there and do the best that we can to win.
I know it's impossible to evaluate this team because you haven't been around this team, this new collection. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like. We don't, you know, I mean, you can put a, you got a pretty good idea who the starting five is going to be, but you can't be 100% sure. Are you optimistic? Have you, in what little you know and have seen about the guys that have come in, the guys that have been drafted, what's left of the Toronto Raptors championship team?
Right, yeah, no,
is this a playoff team?
I mean, I think obviously, again, like, we have that core, right? Like, I think me, Fred, OG, like, these, like, you know, we won a championship. Like, we played big games and we've been at the highest level. And again, like, we all have something to prove and we have a level that we can all get to. And I think for me, like, that's the most important thing, like, having that core. And then also, you know, Gary, you know, we signed and you know, I think we have all the young guys that we have, you know, from Scotty to, like, just length. You know, I think that's one of the things that they talked about, right? Like, having a lot of length and people that can do, you know, multiple things. Like, we have Chris, you know, like, people that can handle the ball, Delon, like, you name it, you know, they can do it, you know? And I think that for me, just having that versatility, like, is super, you know, underrated. And I feel like we can go out there, you know, like, and do a lot of things, you know, like, get into people's faces and, having that length, you know, like, I think it's dangerous. And we just want to be that team that, for me, I think personally, that, like, you don't want to play against. Like, I think that's the identity that we want to have. And obviously something that we're going to have to work on. And it's funny, I had dinner with Coach Nurse the other day and you know, like, and we was talking about it, and it was just like, he was letting me know that, like, man, like, we're going to have to practice a lot this year, you know, just because we have so many new people. We have a lot of young players.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to take a lot of work. Like, and I think that's the work, like, that we're willing to put in. And again, we have the right character guys around, and we just want to, you know, go out there, you know, play, have fun, a lot of energy and be the best that we can be. And I think obviously, like, it's a long road and for us, we're just excited to go back and start the training.
I know that, you know, putting players in slots and positions isn't the way it used to be. You don't have to have a traditional back to the basket center in order to win. And in fact, you know, your team didn't play with that kind of offense very often. But what if Nurse came to you and said, Pascal, we want you to kind of change your game a little bit, and we want you to be the surrogate center on this team, play with your back to the basket a little bit more. You did a little of that in college. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely did.
Well, yeah. Could you do it in the NBA, and would you want to do it in the NBA?
I mean, I think, again, like, I'm a team player, man. Like, obviously, like, that's all I care about, man. Like, I care about winning. And again, like, we did that last year, you know, like, with OG. You see some of us, you know, guarding Joel Embiid or, like, the Jokic, or, you know, trying to go out there and guard them, you know, as fives. And again, I think for me, man, like, I'm all about winning, like I said, and doing everything that it takes to win. And I think for me, like, the best way I need to get to you know, to be put, what position I need to be put in to help our team win, like, that's what I'm going to do. And I think, you know, if those conversations come, you know, we're going to have them. And I think my only goal would be to win, and I'll do anything for that.
So much of your identity as a team in your championship year was based on your defense. Mm-hmm. Do you think you have to refocus on that? You think that has to be a defense first mentality for you and your teammates?
No, for sure. For sure. And I think that, again, we have the, you know, the players for that, you know, like, we have length, we have athleticism, and we have youth, you know, like, we have people that, you know, can go out there and guard and have the legs, and, like, we, you know, I think we can do that. Like, and I think that definitely should be a focus. And I think even for me personally, like, that's something that, you know, I've been working on. I've been watching a lot of film on, and I think that it should be the identity of our team.
Well, you're not that far away from the start of camp, and I know it may be it's going to be a slow start for you. Excuse me. And probably maybe you won't be ready for the beginning of the season, but shortly thereafter. But as you mentioned, you'll be back in Toronto in a few days. It'll be great to have you back. It'll be nice to see you. We're not living that far apart, as I understand. So maybe we'll have a chance to grab a dinner at some point in time. We wish you continued good health and success, safe trip home. And it'll be nice to see you back here in Toronto and have a great year. We'll talk sometime during the season, I hope.
Yeah, no, for sure. Thank you so much, guys, for having me again. Like, it was like, you know, full circle, you know, coming back in me rookie year and, you know, having that interview. And again, like, you know, if everything feels new again, going back to Toronto, you know, I feel like I got drafted again there. So super exciting. And I'm happy, man. Happy to be back and you know, see some familiar faces out there.
Do you remember that interview? Because you and Pirtle came in together.
That's right.
And we had the question. We said, who's going to hit the 3-pointer the first time? And I think you did. I think you beat Pirtle by a game or two. So
no, I think I definitely did.
Pascal, we've missed you, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon. And safe trip home, and all the best during the season, pal.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you guys.
We'll talk to you again soon. Pascal Siakam of the Toronto Raptors, back after this. Well, our thanks to Pascal Siakam for joining us on the program. We sounds like he is getting healthy. Won't be ready, probably, I don't think, to start the regular season.
Doesn't sound like it.
But really, I guess he's doing just about everything except contact. And have you ever had a shoulder problem?
Sorry. No, elbows, not shoulders.
So. Yeah, I've never had a shoulder problem, really. So I can't speak to, and I certainly never had shoulder surgery, so I can't speak to what the process is and or how risky it would be at this point for him to engage in contact. And we know basketball is a high contact sport.
A lot more than people realize.
A lot more. A couple of other things to address today after this rather stunning weekend. The Toronto Blue Jays went berserk over the weekend, scoring 11 runs in the opening game of the Saturday doubleheader, 11 runs in one inning after being no hit, 11 runs in the final inning of game two on Saturday, and then they just scratched out 22 runs yesterday. In
well, we did expect them to beat Baltimore all three times, but not as dramatically as they did.
Let me say this. I've been very cautious about, you know, everybody I hear and everybody we talk to, you know, say, oh, well, you know, they got all these games against Baltimore. They'll win all those games. Well, no, you don't. You don't win every game. I know Baltimore's a horrible, horrible team. But that's baseball. Funny things can happen in baseball. Bad teams beat good teams with some regularity. And they were playing in Baltimore. And every team, regardless of who they are or how bad they are or how good they are, lose games at home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, winning in Baltimore 3 out of 4 is absolutely an achievement. The way they did it was almost scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we know this team can play. We know this team can hit. But that was absurd to watch. I don't think I've ever seen a team, and of course, I've been around this Blue Jay team since 1977, day one. I don't think I've ever seen a team score 44 runs in three consecutive games.
The thing that jumped out at me, Bob, was the winning the doubleheader, the seven-inning doubleheader games.
There's 22 runs in 14 innings, not 18.
Yeah, right. I can only imagine Red Sox fans and Yankee fans screaming that the rules aren't fair because it was only 7-inning games. And you know what? This is still a little bit of a strange pandemic year when it comes to things like that, although you wouldn't know it anymore. But the fact that they won, I mean, scoring as many runs as they did in the top of the seventh to end the game in their inning was phenomenal. The rules helped the Jays on Saturday with 2 7-inning games. There's no question about that. But
well, maybe. But I mean, they won. What did they win? 11-1 and 11-2. Were those the scores?
No. They won one game 11-10.
Oh, 11-10. Oh, well, that's right. 11-10 and then 11-2.
Remember, actually, the first game of the doubleheader, I actually switched off when the Orioles were up. Saying, oh my goodness. Well, good. Well, I was watching something else. College football is pretty good right now. College football is pretty good.
It wasn't very good for Ohio State on Saturday.
I was going to wait to bring that up, but that's okay. You know, the Pac 12 does it. The Pac 12 does it again to Ohio State. Oh, but, you know, the fact that they showed some character to come back at the top of the seventh, I mean, that was unbelievable. So they are a fun team to watch. Now they've got the Rays coming in for three, so this will be another test, starting Monday night at Rogers Center.
Well, it's always a test when you've got Tampa coming in. I mean, the Blue Jays traditionally do not play well against Tampa, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, and they're very good now. So we shall see what we shall see. But they're about as hot as you can be. How long that lasts remains to be seen.
Nine and one in their last 10. So.
Well, I think they won 10 of 11 or 11 of 12 now.
Wow.
The seven-inning thing is really intriguing to me. Is this where we're at from now on? Doubleheaders will be
No, I think innings? I think the commissioner's already said they're going to revert to nine-inning doubleheaders next year again.
Yeah.
I love the seven-inning game. So I do. I do. I mean,
well, from
as long as it's a level playing field for everybody. I have no problem with it.
Well, I guess so. It's just, I confess, you know, a lot of what I lean towards is historic things. It's why I like dynasties in sport, because you remember them. Will you remember, you know, the team that won the World Series or the Stanley Cup 5 years ago, like a one-off? Probably not. You certainly won't forever and ever.
No.
But, you know, in the long term, you're going to talk about greatness. Great players, truly great players, and truly great teams. And truly great teams are dynasties. And I like the idea of long. I remember long games. I remember 18-inning games. I remember sitting in what we used to call the Polish press box at the old CNE Stadium, which was just a concrete box with glass in front of it. Mm-hmm. And I used to sit up there with Pete Bavese and Elliot Wally and Pat Gillick, and we'd watch the games. Mm-hmm. From there, and every once in a while Gord Ash would wander in and they'd shoo him out.
He did tell them how many tickets they sold.
Well, no, he was actually, he ran the grounds crew.
Oh, is that right?
In the first couple of years, yeah. Mm-hmm. And those, like those rain delays or fog delays that we used to have, or those 14, 16, 18 inning games that went till, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I understand most people wound up going home. There were like a few hundred people in the stands, you know, after a 4.5 or 5 hour game when it finally came to an end. But there's a recollection of that. I mean, I've watched thousands of baseball games. And how many can you really remember? You know, you're going to remember big events, World Series wins.
Sure.
You know, those kinds of things. And I also remember memorable nights of these long drawn out games. And when you're playing, it's like an overtime game in hockey. You're not turning the TV off. You're paying attention at all times because you know it can end at any moment. And it's a similar kind of story with an extra inning baseball game. And we've sort of lost that now.
But the extra inning baseball game, Bob, though, it can happen from April to November now, though. I mean, your overtime memories of long overtimes in hockey are, they're playoffs only. So there's limited time. The problem for me is I mean, you and I are old. They have to try, you know, all sports have to try to find a way to recapture young people watching the game. You know, I think a lot of them are hoping that it's going to come through gambling. I really do. I think there's a lot of sports are saying we're going to try to reach, you know, that 18 to 35 year old man or woman who wants to watch sports through gambling. But one of the key things, in my opinion, is the length of the game. We have to get games back down to, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Yeah, but historically, you know, there has to be historic relevance. You know, I mean, how would you feel if hockey games suddenly were only two periods? I mean, everything changes.
Sure.
And if you play baseball games, it solves a time issue, but it creates an historic relevance that is incompatible with the past. You can't have guys
it doesn't, Bob, because what's the rule? What's the rule for a game that is called on account of rain, but a victory is I mean,
but that happens those, so rarely.
Those occurred, but yeah. but the rules of baseball allow for that.
Yeah, but it happens with such rarity.
Innings, right?
Four and a half, okay. Technically, if the home team's ahead. If you reduce baseball to seven innings every game, not just doubleheaders, because doubleheaders had become dinosaurs, right?
Yes,
nobody scheduled doubleheaders. The only reason
nobody wants them because everybody wants 81 gates. Everybody wants 81 gates.
Yeah. So and even now they're not real doubleheaders. They're split doubleheaders, right? Mm-hmm. So, well, anyway, we'll get on to this more on another occasion. Briefly want to mention Ms. Fernandez and her performance over the course of the weekend and unfortunately losing the U.S. Open final. But
winning the crowd.
Well, yeah. And she was eloquent in her speech afterwards. And it was a very emotional moment. She did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
My question for today is she the tennis player of the future? Or was this just a magical week for her?
I mean, obviously, I think it's too early to suggest that. But I'll tell you what, her game on the court does seem to have a lot of different angles to it. You know, she can serve. The serve hurt her badly Saturday, but she can move the ball around. She's athletic. I can only think and only hope that this is the beginning of something very big, and maybe we'll have the Fernandez Raducanu rivalry, but maybe we'll have a Fernandez Andreescu rivalry too.
Well, look, I can't give the answer to any of those questions. I would say that based on what I saw of Raducanu in a couple of matches before the final and then in the final, honestly, I think she's the better player, and they're essentially the same age. And has a chance to be a bigger chance to be a star than Fernandez. And
the question for me is, does size play a role? Because Raducanu is a much taller, lankier player than
of course it does.
Lele is. Yeah, that's what I wondered on Saturday.
She's tiny by tennis comparisons, and it's going to be a challenge for her throughout her career. I mean, I wish her nothing but the best. I was captivated and excited by her performance. But
by the way, so was Chrissy Everett. Holy smokes. Chrissy Everett fell in love with her.
Again, our thanks to Pascal Siakam for joining us. Thank you for joining us, whether it's through the podcast, as you've been doing for some time, or now through Sirius XM. We'll see you again tomorrow. As they say, same time, same station. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, see you.